Hey, this is Wayne Cook, and you're listening to the What's Brewing Show Network.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for West Coast Bias, the show brought to you all the way from the best coast. It's the West Coast Bias, that is. Aw, yeah.
And welcome to another episode of West Coast Bias. I am your host, Jamal. Of course, this is going to be another car cast. I'm liking this format. It takes me 30 minutes to get to work. I think it keeps me on time. And the sound quality isn't too bad. So, of course, this is West Coast Bias. West Coast Bias is part of the What's Brewing Network. One network, lots of great shows, including the What's Brewing Symposium, where the guys, Jake, Mike, occasionally Bill, and every once in a while, myself, talk about UCLA sports. Let's see, there's the, obviously, the Bare Minimum, where Jake and his daughter Megan talk about her experiences at Cal, my alma mater. You know, I'm sure it sounds very interesting these days with everything that's going on college campuses. But this is West Coast Bias. West Coast Bias is where we talk about LA sports. I know, kind of weird, right? Guy in Arizona talk about LA sports. Well, you know, I made the move, so I still watch, thanks to technology, the Lakers, the Dodgers, the Kings, occasionally the Clippers, and I'm gonna talk about all of them today. And actually, before I get into that, it's kind of weird, right? Technology these days. I hate to sound like that person who doesn't know what the hell they're talking about when they get a new fangled angle machine, but I just turned 44, and if you had told me when I was 7 that in my 40s I would live hundreds of miles away from my favorite teams and that I could easily watch them without the use of a gigantic satellite like my uncle used to have, we're talking about a real 30 by 30 circumference type of thing that you had to get a forklift to put on your roof just to be able to watch sports from all over the country. You can do that with a touch of a button. You can subscribe. It's a one-time deal, and you can watch your Lakers. You can watch your Dodgers. You can watch, hell, if you want to peek in on the good teams, like the Oklahoma City Thunder, which I did occasionally this year, or, just catting every NFL game you imaginable without having to worry about regional blackouts. You can do that. It's one of those things where it fascinates me. I can put on the radio and listen on an app like iHeartRadio and listen to the Kings broadcast, even though I'm 500 miles away from Staples Center, a.k.a. Crypto.com. I mean, I know it's not anything new, but it always amazes me. Or even just sports talk like I did yesterday. It's in a sports talk pick from L.A. ESPN L.A. is one of my favorites. So I can listen in and get the thoughts of guys like John Ireland and Steve Mason and Alan Sliwa and Travis Rogers and the gang, and listen to what they thought of what happened on Friday. And what I mean by what happened on Friday was that the Lakers did what I said they shouldn't do. They fired Darvin Ham. That's right. The Lakers now, have created a biannual event where they try to figure out who to hire as their next NBA head coach. And listen, I know Darvin Ham made a lot of mistakes this year, and even last year at times, though it was different roster, and as per usual, dealing with injuries to LeBron and Anthony Davis. But this year, with a fully healthy LeBron and a fully healthy Anthony Davis, the best he could do was get himself into an 8 seed and win a playing game again, and then get completely pushed out of the playoffs by their nemesis, the Denver Nuggets, or their recent nemesis, the Denver Nuggets. And he was a scapegoat. And I say he's a scapegoat because as much as his three-guard scheme and his refusal to call timeouts when there's a huge run going on, or his misunderstanding of who to play when he needs rebounds or who to play when he needs perimeter defense, he didn't put the team together. He didn't trade away KCP, and Kyle Kuzma, tall defenders, for Russell Westbrook, which he inherited. He didn't sign, was, he wasn't the one who went old and signed guys like Carmelo Anthony in his 100th year and Trevor Ariza, those guys, although they didn't play for him, but you know what I'm talking about. He didn't do those things. He didn't let Alex Caruso walk a few measly shekels. That's not his fault. He didn't put this team together. He wasn't the one who thought that Jackson Hayes would be an adequate backup to Anthony Davis, or signed Cam Reddish thinking that they could get something out of him. He certainly, he didn't. It's not his fault that Jared Vanderbilt played all of like 10 games this whole year when they were going to rely on him being a piece of the defensive scheme. And he wasn't the one that dangled D'Angelo Russell for a while there out in the wind. And certainly he did bench Austin Reeves at the beginning of the season. He did bench D'Angelo Russell. But I'm not sure that those were his decisions being made. I don't know if it's like in Major League Baseball where there is a committee and a plan. That's just my point. They fired the guy even though there were certainly a lot of things that he was saddled with. And yes, he made mistakes, but firing a coach every 2 years seems to be the Lakers' MO these days, and it's really not working. You win a championship with Frank Vogel, a guy who was like the third choice, and you can read into that all as much as you want, but that's the truth. The Lakers tried and failed to get Ty Lue, and I think it's more from the Lakers' standpoint. Ty Lue wanted a 5-year deal, be tied to LeBron's contract at the time, and the Lakers refused to do that. We're only going to do a 3-year deal, and then insisted that they have first right of refusal or choose his assistance for him, Ty Lue's assistance for him. And Ty Lue said, "You can take a walk." I believe Monty Williams was offered the same thing, and he said, "You can take a flying leap off of the tallest building." Just things like that. And I don't know who's making the decisions. I really wish that the Lakers had a basketball ops where it wasn't 30 guys or gals, if you believe the rumors, making these kind of basketball operations decisions. And it's kind of ironic that the person who did make a lot of these moves, Rob Pelinka, or as I like to call him, Kobe's agent, was the one who wrote that it didn't work. He was the one who put out the statements that it didn't work with Darvin, appreciated what he gave them, and thought he was a dedicated person to the team and the organization, but they were going to go in a different direction. And that's like the third or fourth time that Rob Pelinka has put out a statement like that since he joined this organization back in 2017. And frankly, it just shows you what kind of a dysfunctional franchise, despite winning a championship, the Lakers are. So I don't know. It's kind of funny. And you kind of knew the writing was on the wall, right? It's probably why I brought it up in the last CarCast, was because as soon as the postseason ended for the Lakers, there were already, Darvin Ham was in the press conference and people were asking him when he thinks he's going to get fired. There was already rumors of J.J. Redick is going to coach. If the Clippers got eliminated, they're going to try to get Tyronn Lue. Those kind of rumors were out before he got the axe, and then of course he did get the axe on Friday. And then almost immediately, it's kind of funny, almost immediately, Tyronn Lue and Jason Kidd should send the Lakers some flowers. Those two teams were immediately throughout, press releases or leaks, where they said they were re-upping their coaches, regardless of what happened in their playoff series. So Tyronn Lue and the Clippers were eliminated, and even up to yesterday, the Clippers were saying, "We're working on renegotiating with Tyron. we're going to extend him." And then the Dallas Mavericks, who did move on beating the Clippers, almost immediately said, "Yeah, we're going to work with Jason to extend him, regardless of what happens for the rest of the postseason. He's part of our plans." And so it's like, if the Lakers were firing Darvin Ham that quickly in order to jump in on Tyronn Lue or Jason Kidd, obviously that backfired. I don't know, but you're talking about two veteran coaches. So now, who knows who it's going to be. Could be Kenny Atkinson. the Brooklyn Nets coach, who was derailed by the likes of Kyrie Irving, Harden, and Durant. You know, so obviously he knows what it is to deal with all these egos. And it failed miserably, so he's perfect for the Lakers. There's some other assistants, you know, names come up, and then I'm like, Budenholzer, who was dismissed last summer by Giannis and his wishes as a ploy to keep him, have him extend his contract in Milwaukee. That obviously worked. but, you know, it's just, you're going to hear names, and, you know, what does it really matter? I mean, it's the roster. The Lakers are going to have to redo their roster. I'm sure they're not going to, if D'Angelo Russell doesn't pick up his player option, which he probably won't, because he could probably get more in free agency, or at least more years in free agency, they'll have to find somebody to replace his point production. You know, if LeBron, I still think he'll opt in. It's $51 million. He'd be crazy to think, it'd be crazy for him to go out and try to test the waters. I mean, he'd get somebody to sign him, but I mean, I don't know how you walk away from $51 million. And then, of course, actually yesterday, I think there was, it was Shams Charania of ESPN and ESPN.com. I think he mentioned that the Lakers were already working with LeBron to extend him, which I don't know what that looks like. You're talking about somebody who's going to be 40 this year in his 22nd season. Do you really want to extend him for 3 years, 2 years even? But he's played at an all-star level. He should be an all-NBA pick by the media. We'll see. But, again, it just feels like the Lakers are going to be, the phrase is captured by the moment. They'll get somebody who, Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Rob Pelinka, Kurt Rambis, Linda Rambis, Jeannie, I don't know, maybe one of Jeannie's sisters, either the illegitimate one or the one who runs PR or ran PR for the Lakers. I don't know, maybe we can get Johnny Buss back on there. Maybe he can make some decisions if he's not trying to sue his sister. My point is, there isn't one voice running basketball ops. There's 30. And as the old saying goes, if there's too many cooks in the kitchen, you know, the soup ain't going to turn out right. So, we'll see. Yeah, briefly, I did touch on the Clippers. They lost again, I think yesterday being Monday. Paul George, rumor saying that he was going to test free agency. And as much as everybody likes to jump on the Lakers, it's pretty amazing that the noise from the summer of 2019 was about Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, and how it was going to be the best team in basketball, and collectively together, they didn't even get to one Western Conference final. And you're going to say, oh, wait, they made it in 2021. Very good. Yes, they did. But Kawhi Leonard was not part of that. He played two or three postseason games, immediately got injured, and then Paul George and company did their best to do the heavy lifting and somehow got into the Western Conference finals in 2021 against the Suns. You know, it's pretty interesting. So we'll see. I wouldn't be surprised if the Lakers try to take a whack at playoff P, Paul George. They did, and, you know, there was the rumor of them trading for him in 2018. They didn't. I think smartly, LeBron James and Paul George probably wouldn't have worked as well as Anthony Davis did. You know, who knows what he's going to get. Battled injuries this year. I think last year was an elbow. This year was either a hamstring. And then played decently in the Maverick series, but then also had one game where what he and James Harden combined for like 8 points or something like that. It's just weird. The Clippers are going to have a weird summer going into their new basketball arena for next year. So there's that. okay, let's move on to a little bit of Dodger news. Obviously, if nothing big is happening, there's going to be me just dropping in tidbits. And by big, I mean like a trade or, I don't know, some extraordinary hot streak. They had a 6-game winning streak, lost one, got back on the saddle, and now have a 5-game winning streak. Over the weekend, they swept the Braves. Sort of a departure from last year where the Braves were the better team. I heard on the radio that it was like, yeah, it's April, May. Maybe too early to judge how these teams, two teams are going to look. A sweep is nice, but don't read too much into it. I would agree because these things happen. It's baseball. You know, a couple weeks ago we were talking about the Dodgers struggling against the Cubs and, God, who did they play where it was like, why are we losing to this team? Oh, yeah, the Nationals, you know, and then this week they're on fire. You know, then they immediately went on a six-game winning streak, and then this week they're even more on fire, losing a game and then jumping on a five-game winning streak. And I think some of that comes from the cynicism of it's, well, it's regular season, and we've seen what they can do in the regular season. This team's going to win 100 games, you know, falling asleep. You know, they're just going to wake up and it's going to be like, oh, well, we'll all wake up one day and then be like, oh, the Dodgers won 100 games? Okay, yeah, let's see what they do in October. So, I know, that's a terrible way to fan, but, you know, they've been one of the best teams in baseball. They've got a three-season streak of winning 100 games. First time ever in franchise history that they did that. And, oh, by the way, best record in the COVID shortened season. And the year before that, they had 106 games. So, had it not been for COVID, probably wouldn't have been on a five-game 100-win winning streak here. But it doesn't really matter because all they have are that one World Series in 2020. You know, in the COVID shortened season, they've yet to win a championship in a 162 game season. And you know, counts for me, might not count for others. It was a wonderful moment. What have you done for me lately? I'd like to see the Dodgers at least get back to a World Series, especially when you're talking about spending all this money on guys like Ohtani God, I always forget his name. Yamamoto, that kind of stuff. So, you know, hot streak. Ohtani's hit like howitzers out of Dodger Stadium the last couple of days. I think he's hit three or four home runs in the last three games. All of them seemingly over 420 feet. It's pretty amazing. And he was named Player of the Week last week. So. Dodgers got Walker Buehler back. I wouldn't consider somebody that I would rely on. You know, first start, only went four innings, gave up three runs. One of them probably shouldn't have. A home run that popped out of the outfielder's glove and over the wall. But we'll see. I'm okay with him being our fifth best pitcher. Everybody else that we're supposed to be relying on this year is pitching well. And, of course, Blake Treinen is back. He should bolster the bullpen. He did well in his first stint. You know, but the unfortunate part is I think Evan Phillips, our closer, went to 15-day DL with a strain in his calf. And then when they brought up Walker Buehler, they had to put Joe Kelly on the injured list thanks to a shoulder strain, which is never good when it comes to pitchers. So we'll see. But again, you sweep the Braves, you got a five-game winning streak after being on a six-game winning streak, won 11 of 13, I believe. That's pretty good. And your competition, like the Padres and the Giants, are just kind of middling. Arizona's scuffling. But we'll see. It's all about October with this team, and that's just the way it is. So now that I've given you a little Lakers and Dodgers news, let's talk about what my plan was for this week, was to talk about the Kings. And Jake's probably rolling his eyes, but he has mentioned many times on air that playoff hockey is his favorite. And I don't blame him. It's exciting. I watch other teams' games just because it's, you know, the excitement of being in an arena for a playoff game, the nerves, the chances of going into overtime, and then suddenly it's over. That kind of atmosphere is just, it's one of the best in sports, I think. You know, if you ask Maple Leafs fans from Toronto, they would say, go to hell, Jamal. They lost Game 7 to the Boston Bruins in overtime after coming back from a 3-1 deficit. They haven't beaten the Bruins in a postseason series, I believe, since 1959. They're 1-9 in their last 10 elimination games. No, sorry, 1-9 in their last 10 post-playoff series. And I think they're, like, even worse than a Game 7. I don't have those stats. Not my team. but I watch. It's interesting. That's the playoff scenario. But I think since the last time I talked to you, the Kings were eliminated for the third year in a row by the Edmonton Oilers. And it's gotten progressively worse. The first time in 2022 has been 7 games. Last year was in 6 games. And this year was in 5 games. And they've looked even more and more incompetent against the Oilers every successive year without seemingly having any sort of improvement on the team, the way the direction is going. So you would expect that ownership saw this and said, we got to fire general manager Rob Blake, who's been with the organization for, I believe, 11 years in the front office and 7 years as GM in charge of hockey operations. We got to fire Jim Hiller, the interim coach. I'm sure that axe fell almost immediately, because that's what you do, right? Wrong. Yesterday was media day. Jim Hiller was there, doing the, God, what do they call it? Their media availability. They're basically their last media availability of the season, where they discuss the season with the collective local media. He was there, and so was Rob Blake. And Rob Blake, on behalf of Luc Robitaille, the president of the team, both said that they thought that they were an improved team. Those are true words, folks. Not lying. They thought that the team had improved this year. If you look at the statistics, and there's some truth to that, but it doesn't mean anything. Because once the postseason rolled around, you threw out the statistics. And they feel like there's just something missing, and that they'll get it right this summer. And I don't know how you can do that. I don't know how you can say that. It's been 10 years since this team won a playoff series. They got rid of that core group because it was a Stanley Cup, in many very different ways. Guys got older. Obviously, the dominoes started to fall with their core of Justin Brown, Anze Kopitar, Jonathan Quick, Drew Doughty, their young group that sort of gelled together at the right time and led them to the renaissance, their platinum era, let's call it, where they won 2 Stanley Cups in 3 years and were in the Western Conference Final in that middle year. There was contract issues and things like that. The other guys had to go because of age, and they rebuilt, and they were picking in the top 10 yearly in the first round. And then things started to sort of click, and in 2022 they finally had a postseason team, and they've gotten the postseason every year since then, but it hasn't meant anything, and they haven't been able to solve teams like the Oilers. They haven't really been what you would consider a contender. Yes, they've made the postseason, but it's not like they've put the scare into anybody or put together a few runs or something, just something where you were like, this team might win the division, this team might win the best record in the conference or in the league. That hasn't happened. It hasn't even come close to that, looking like that. In a time where players are now getting 100 points again, and they're scoring 40 goals regularly or 50 goals, the Kings don't have anybody like that on their team. Goaltending, it was shaky even when Jonathan Quick was still here, and so they decided to cut bait with him, and yet they haven't been able to replace him. They have no goaltending depth in the organization. Guys that they've drafted and then put through their development team, it just hasn't worked out. They don't have goaltending. They had to rely on a 37-year-old Cam Talbot this year. Phoenix Copley was their backup. He got hurt. And then they had to pick up David Rittich off the waiver wires or off the farm in Ontario. And he was good, but it wasn't exactly putting the fear in teams. And even when he was good in the postseason, there's nobody who could score any goals. Lost the 1-0 game at home. It's one of those things. You know what the definition of insanity is? It's doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome. that kind of story with this team. And it's just, I don't know. I don't know if it's just because, as I say, I feel like there's absentee ownership. They're owned by a conglomerate, AEG. Philip Anschutz is the chairman. I doubt he even thinks about what the Kings are doing. As long as the bottom line is there, you know, they're part of, the Kings are part of just a package, right? LA Live, Crypto.com Arena. It's just another asset. So I don't know what their CEO or COO or whoever's above guys like Luke Robitaille and Rob Blake, what they're thinking of not having the results that they're supposed to have, you know, namely at least contending for a cup or winning a cup. It's just not there. And it's just kind of weird because you would think, you know, here's a team 10 years ago, they were winning the Stanley Cup and being a real contender in the entire NHL. And somehow they've gotten, they've regressed almost annually every year since winning a championship. And I don't know if it's because it's a niche sport. They've never attracted a superstar free agent in the sort of salary cap free agency era. Most of the superstars that they've acquired have been through trade. You know, where that means you got to give up assets. This year they tried. I'm not saying Pierre-Luc Dubois was a superstar, but they thought they were getting a guy who was going to get them 80 points, score 40 goals, and they didn't get that. And he stunk it up even more in the postseason. And they had to give up assets, trade pieces, prospects, young players to get him. And it's not worked out. And now they're saddled with this guy who knows when he's going to be good for them. And there are just no superstars. There isn't a superstar. And a superstar doesn't guarantee a Stanley Cup. But it certainly feels like that they're so far away from that. And why would fans be excited about another 95-ish, 98-ish points? Another third place finish? Another postseason where they looking up and it's the Edmonton Oilers? Or the Vegas Knights. I mean, frankly, when it comes to the other teams in their division, they just don't look it. And somehow they got passed by a team like Vancouver, who was scuffling and sort of remade itself and, you know, almost had the best record in the Western Conference this year. You know, a team like Dallas a couple years ago were in that bubble, that first bubble Stanley Cup final, was kind of... They in that first Stanley Cup bubble in 2020, they made it, but nobody expected them to be there, and then sort of have through drafting had one of the better young teams, a fast team. I mean, it's just the way the league is going, points, speed, skilled big men. The Kings don't have those guys. They got slow guys, big guys who are too slow. You know, get beat off the puck, aren't hitting anybody because nobody's there. Or they do have some speedy guys, but no skill. You know, just guys who are skating really fast down, and once they get to the goalie, they can't hit the net. Or they're not doing it consistently. So, if you're a Kings fan, it's very frustrating to hear that things are just going to stay the same. And so there's just a stagnancy with this team, like swamp water. You know, and they have some decisions to make. Victor Arvidsson, one of their better players, who's always injured. I think he's an unrestricted free agent this year, or limited restriction free agent. I don't know what the term is. I just don't know. I don't know how they're going to get better in goal. I don't know how they're going to get better when it comes to their defense. I don't know if it's time to cut bait with guys like Anze Kopitar and Drew Doughty. I don't want that to happen, but if they could still get something for those guys, which I doubt because they're older. I think Anze Kopitar is 36, Drew Doughty is 34. Them being older, the chances of them getting something for them is slim, and I don't know where they're going to where they're going to change things. Other than, you know, everybody was kind of hoping that the coach, the general manager, were gone, and that there would be a new philosophy, but frankly, I don't know how that's going to work. And so, If they're not, then I don't see why they would change things. I can see why they would say, we'll just keep doing the same thing. You know, because frankly, if ownership is not putting their feet to the fire, what incentive do they have to change things? None. They'll keep their job. If they get into the postseason, they can, you know, kind of like what we were talking about the Dodgers, except the Dodgers finally decided, hey, enough is enough. They went and got Shohei Ohtani. They outbid everybody for Yamamoto, made a trade here and there to bolster the offense, help out Betts and Friedman so they don't look so useless in the postseason. The Kings, I don't know if they have a luxury to do that. It's a salary cap is different. I know that there's sort of modified, they don't call it salary cap, but there's a modified financial structure. And the Dodgers did wait a few years to get themselves out of those penalties so they can jump in and make the kind of signings that they did this past winter. But in the NHL, it's not the same. But that's why you don't make moves for purely Luke Dubois. And you do a better job of developing your young guys. You know, there's some guys who haven't gotten a chance to come up and play because they have these veterans in front of them. Maybe it's time to just let the young guys take over. Quentin Byfield in his first full non-injury season looked really good, got 20 goals. You know, if you just gave him a chance to do it on his own without the likes of Kopitar or Fiala or those other guys, you know, maybe it'll be another year. You know, he's only 21. Maybe it'll be another strong year, but you got to give him some weapons. And if you've drafted well, it'll work out. But if you haven't and you're not developing these guys, then I don't know why, as general manager, Rob Blake should keep his job. So I think that's good enough here. The Rams and the Chargers drafted. I think that happened since the last time of the NFL draft. The Rams went with defense, the Chargers. I don't remember. They got the biggest offensive lineman they can get with their first round pick. We'll see. And how that turns out. The Rams have shown that they can really draft. Nobody thought that Puka would come out and turn into one of the best wide receivers in the NFL. And they drafted him like in the third round. So we'll see. They got the defensive lineman, Kobe Turner. Through the draft, again, he wasn't a first-round draft. He was like a third or fourth-round draft pick, and he led all rookies in sacks last year. I mean, the Rams have a pretty good track record with the draft. This was his first year for the Chargers in the Jim Harbaugh era. We'll see how that goes. Obviously, addressing the offensive line will help, certainly to protect your franchise quarterback, but they got rid of a lot of their other weapons. No more Eckler, no more Keenan Allen. Mike Williams, I believe, is gone too. If not, he's injured. So it doesn't really matter. So we'll see. It might be a learning curve year for the Chargers, but the Rams certainly would like to show that they bolstered their team through the draft. First time they had a first-round draft pick since like 2016, I believe. When they picked Jared Goff. So we'll see how it goes. But, you know, again, it's a draft. It's a crapshoot. You never know how it's going to go. But more to come on that. I don't think there's any other news in LA sports going on. I don't really have an Arizona musing, except that my kids are going to be out of school in like 2 weeks, which is early for them. They're in L.A., they were getting out in June and having to go back in August, and here they get out in May, and they'll be going back in August, so some fun times, probably a lot of pool days for the kids, so don't be jealous that, yes, we'll be hanging out by the pool. Jake has a pool, so he's not jealous, but, you know, some of you other listeners, but expect to hear more from me as the Lakers search goes on, as the Kings figure out what the hell they're going to do. If there's Clippers news, I'll give it to you. And certainly, if anything big happens in the Dodger world, other than, you know, Ohtani hitting missiles, pretty sure NORAD is going to be on him soon, tracking the baseballs that he hits. But, yeah, so as we always say on our podcast here, We are the West Coast. We're the best coast. We're West Coast Bias.
West Coast Bias.